Hey, Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. You know, if you ever feel like you're just drowning in bad news, like constant crisis headlines about the economy or politics or the environment.
Oh, absolutely. It feels relentless sometimes.
Well, then this deep dive is definitely for you. We're getting into a book that's like a strong antidote to all that gloom. It's Matt Ridley's The Rational Optimist, Progress's Engine.
It's a really powerful read and timely, I think. Ridley isn't just offering, you know, vague hope. He uses hard data.
Right. He really challenges that underlying assumption that things are just getting worse and worse.
Systematically. He forces you to look at the long-term trends.
So our mission today is to unpack his big question. How on earth did humans go from, well, basic survival to modern life? How did things get so much better in terms of health, wealth, all of it?
And the crucial follow-up, can it keep going, especially with all the challenges we face now in the 21st century?
Okay, so to really get his argument, we need to understand where Ridley himself is coming from.
Definitely. He's British, a scientist, journalist, author. But his background isn't primarily economics, which is interesting. It's zoology. He did his DPhil at Oxford in biology.
Right, and he worked for The Economist for years, science editor, correspondent. He knows how to communicate complex stuff. Wrote other big books too, like Genome.
And that biology background is key. That's what makes his viewpoint pretty distinctive. He applies evolutionary ideas like emergence, natural selection, even symbiosis to human societies and economies.
So he's not just looking at history through politics or economics.
No, he sees it more like an evolving system driven by exchange from the bottom up. It's that biological lens that makes optimism rational, not just wishful thinking.
Okay, let's unpack the core argument then. It sounds simple, but it's got layers. Ridley basically says human well-being, health, wealth, happiness, it's been on this incredible upward path.
Relentless and accelerating, yeah.
And it's a direct result of one main thing. Exchange and specialization, working together, basically.
And he has that fantastic metaphor for how it works, ideas having sex.
Huh, yeah, it grabs your attention.
It does, but it's actually a really good way to put it. When people trade things, say, tools for food or services, they're not just swapping items, they're swapping the ideas embedded in those items, the know-how.
Ah, so the knowledge gets combined, like different ideas meet and create something new.
Exactly. It allows for this constant cross-pollination, recombination. Innovation just keeps building on itself almost exponentially. It's not about lone geniuses. It's about this huge networked intelligence.
So the book is really ambitious. It's reframing all of human history as this story of emergent cooperation through trade.
And it directly tackles pessimism and all those fears about running out of resources, overpopulation, climate change. Ridley argues the very engine that created progress is still capable of solving these problems.
That it's not broken.
Right. It's still running, still adaptable.
Okay, so let's dig into how this engine actually got started. Ridley talks about the collective brain.
Mm-hmm. This is fundamental. He argues our species' big advantage wasn't just individual brain power. I mean, early modern humans might not have been smarter individually than Neanderthals.
Really?
Possibly not. The key difference was our ability to connect our brains together through networks of exchange, creating this vast shared intelligence.
The collective brain. And the foundation for that is specialization, like the division of labor.
Precisely. Think about it. You listening right now, you probably specialize in something specific for work, right?
Yeah, definitely.
You can only afford to specialize because you can trade for everything else you need, food, housing, energy. Ridley is blunt about it. Self-sufficiency is poverty. Interconnectedness, that's wealth.
Wow. And he has a really stark example of this, doesn't he? The Tasmanians.
Oh, yeah. It's quite chilling, actually. About 10,000 years ago, rising sea levels cut Tasmania off from mainland Australia.
So they became isolated.
Completely. And their population was relatively small. They couldn't maintain the complex skills they once had because the collective brain shrank. They didn't just stagnate.
They went backwards.
They experienced actual technological regression, lost skills like making bone tools, even fishing in some areas. It's a dark, powerful illustration of how crucial that network of exchange is. Connection isn't a luxury, it's survival.
That idea of connection leads straight into another major theme, how humanity escaped the Malthusian trap.
Right. Thomas Malthus, the famous pessimist, he argued population growth would always, always outrun food supply. leading to inevitable famine and misery.
Sounds familiar, even today sometimes.
It does. Yeah. But Ridley shows just how spectacularly wrong Malthus was, purely because of innovation.
He really celebrates figures like Norman Borlaug, doesn't he? The father of the Green Revolution.
Absolutely. Borlaug's work developing high-yield crops saved countless lives. But maybe even more crucial, Ridley points to the Haber-Bosch process.
Ah, the process for making synthetic fertilizer from nitrogen in the air.
Exactly. It sounds technical, but it fundamentally changed agriculture. It let us bypass natural limits on food production. Put that together with the Green Revolution. Ridley argues modern ingenuity literally fed billions who otherwise wouldn't be here. It's staggering.
We kind of take fertilizer for granted, don't we?
Totally. We rarely stop to think about the impact of these huge innovations.
And where did a lot of this innovation really take off? Ridley points to the triumph of cities.
Yeah, cities are like innovation accelerators. They're dense hubs where people and ideas constantly bump into each other. More trade, more specialization, more cultural exchange.
Like ancient Phoenician traders or Renaissance vendors.
Perfect examples. Cities are the physical embodiment of that collective brain firing on all cylinders.
Which brings us to the Industrial Revolution. Ridley sees this not as some grand planned project.
No, definitely not. He argues it was totally bottom up, driven by practical tinkerers, entrepreneurs, people experimenting.
Because they had the conditions for it, like property rights, free trade.
Exactly. Mm. And crucially, access to cheap, dense energy coal initially.
Which raises the tricky side, right?
Yeah.
Industrialization brought amazing progress, but also pollution, terrible working conditions, inequality. Does Ridley just brush that aside?
Not exactly. He acknowledges the costs, the negative externalities. But his argument is that the engine of innovation itself is the only thing capable of solving the problems it creates.
How so?
Well, think about energy. He frames the history of energy as the release of slaves. First, we relied on human muscle, then animal muscle. Incredible drudgery.
Right.
Fossil fuels, for all their problems, provided an unprecedented amount of cheap energy. That energy liberated billions from backbreaking labor, made modern agriculture possible, powered everything.
So the argument is you need that energy first to get development going.
Yes. And his policy point is pretty sharp. Denying developing nations access to affordable, reliable energy, whatever the source currently available to them, is basically condemning them to stay poor. You're kicking away the ladder the West used to climb up.
That's a challenging perspective.
It is. It forces you to weigh the trade-offs.
Okay, stepping back from the history, let's pull out some big themes. Theme one seems to be prosperity is a bottom-up emergent phenomenon.
Right. This taps into ideas like Hayek's catalaxy or spontaneous order. Progress isn't designed by a committee. It bubbles up from billions of individual interactions, buying, selling, trying new things.
So no central planner, no government could possibly replicate that complexity.
That's the argument. It's an emergent intelligence that's far greater than any individual mind or group, which, you know, makes you question how effective top-down, heavily controlled solutions can be for really complex global problems.
Interesting. Okay, theme two. Innovation is the ultimate resource.
This tackles the running out of stuff fear head on. Pessimists often focus on finite physical resources, oil, minerals, water.
Yeah, the limits to growth idea.
But Ridley says the one resource that's truly infinite is human ingenuity, our ability to find new ways of doing things.
He talks about dematerialization, right? Using less stuff to get the same result.
Exactly. Or substitution. Copper gets expensive. We invent fiber optics made from sand, which is abundant. History is full of examples. The solution isn't just austerity, it's finding smarter, more efficient, often cleaner alternatives. Focus on creation, not just constraint.
Okay, and theme three gets into why we often feel so gloomy despite the data, the systematic bias toward pessimism.
This is fascinating. Why does bad news travel so fast? Why does pessimism often seem more sophisticated, more intellectual?
Good question.
Ridley suggests it's partly because bad news is often sudden and dramatic, a crisis, a disaster, a failure. Easy to report, easy to react to emotionally. It's top down.
Whereas progress.
Progress is usually slow, incremental, cumulative. It's the result of millions of small positive changes. It's bottom up and emergent. It just doesn't make headlines in the same way. You hear about the plane crash, not the millions of safe flights.
So we need to consciously look at the long-term data, life expectancy, income, literacy, rather than just reacting to the daily noise.
Precisely. Look at the trend lines, not just the headlines.
Ridley is brilliant at coining memorable phrases for these ideas. Let's talk about a few key quotes.
Yeah, he really is. The big one we mentioned, ideas have sex. It just perfectly captures that innovation isn't solitary genius, it's recombination, it's connection.
It's about mixing things up.
And then there's the one that really hits home about trade. Self-sufficiency is poverty. The route out of poverty is to connect with the global brain.
It connects everything, doesn't it? From ancient humans trading obsidian.
Right up to modern globalization. Trade isn't just a nice to have. It's fundamentally essential for prosperity and knowledge growth.
And finally, how he defines his own optimism. It's not passive.
No, definitely not, he says. Optimism is not a complacent faith that things will get better on their own. It is the belief that the conditions are in place for people to make them better. The pessimists are right when they say that if we carry on as we are, we will run into trouble. But they are wrong because we will not carry on as we are.
Ah, so is confidence in our ability to adapt and solve problems because we will innovate when faced with challenges.
Exactly. It's an active, rational confidence, not blind faith.
Okay, so let's bring this down to earth. How can we actually apply these ideas? Personally, professionally?
Well, professionally, the message is loud and clear. Specialize and exchange. Get really good at something valuable.
Deep expertise.
Right. But don't stay in your silo. Actively connect, collaborate, network with people who have different skills. Ridley's whole argument suggests that the best breakthroughs happen at the intersections of different fields and ideas.
That makes a lot of sense. And what about, like, socially or politically?
The book definitely pushes towards policies that foster openness and freedom, free trade, lower barriers to entry, allowing experimentation.
Because that maximizes the connections, maximizes the collective brain.
That seems to be the implication. Things like heavy regulation or protectionism in this view are sand in the gears of that innovation engine. They shrink the collective brain power.
And maybe just for our own mindset, how can this help us deal with the world?
I think it offers a useful filter. When you see a big problem, a scary headline, instead of just despairing, you can ask, okay, what mechanisms are already in place or could emerge to tackle this? Where's the potential for innovation and exchange to find a solution? It shifts the focus from just the problem to potential solutions.
That feels healthier, actually.
Yeah, a bit more constructive.
So wrapping up, what's one thing that really stuck with you from this deep dive?
For me, it was the sheer elegance of the synthesis, how Ridley weaves together biology, economics, history, to show that cooperation through exchange isn't just nice, it's this incredibly powerful emergent force. It makes you see prosperity not as zero sum, but as this amazing positive sum game we've created.
Yeah. And for me, I think it was the historical depth, the idea that this whole incredible journey of human progress might have been kicked off by simple acts of trade like 100,000 years ago, swapping shells or tools. It gives you a kind of faith, maybe, in that long-term trajectory of collective human ingenuity.
A reason to bet on humanity, perhaps?
Maybe so. Definitely a thought-provoking perspective.
Yeah.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.